This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The United States military has roughly 140,000 troops in Iraq right now, American forces bound in their conduct by military law and by the chain of command. Among them, often doing similar work in similarly dangerous situations, are nearly 20,000 private security contractors. These aren't the civilian workers who drive trucks, deliver the mail, or serve chow at base camps, but private soldiers who make more money than the troops do and operate under different rules, sometimes with quite different results. Criticism often focuses on allegations that contracting companies overcharge the military and that these contractors have stepped outside of the rules of combat, don't coordinate their operations with the military or with each other, and are answerable to no one. In recent weeks, tension between contractors and enlisted troops flared into some ugly incidents. Outsourcing wartime tasks to private companies is an integral part of Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld's vision of a leaner, more flexible military, but flexibility comes with a cost in the budget and on the battlefield. Tonight, the PBS documentary series Frontline airs an investigation into security contractors, what they do, why they do it, how they affect American forces, and American policy. Later in the program, news from today's summit in Jerusalem between Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas. But first, private warriors. If you've worked as a security contractor in Iraq, or if you're in the military and you worked alongside contractors, give us a phone call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. If you have questions about how the security businesses work, of course, you can join us as well, 800-989-8255. Joining us now from our bureau in New York is frontline correspondent Martin Smith. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Your program was finished taping by the time this most recent incident happened in Iraq, where some contractors were taken captive by U.S. Marines, say they were abused over 3 days. The Marines said they'd been fired on by the contractors. In a way, your report almost anticipates that.
There was nothing surprising about that incident. In fact, it seems like that was an accident waiting to happen. I'd heard stories very much like that from other contractors and from the military. So when I heard that, all the pieces fell into place.
Who are these people? Who are these contractors? And first of all, begin by saying, who are the companies that employ them?
There are a number of companies, all the way from some pretty experienced, reputable security companies like Blackwater Security, and Aranus, but those are the big companies that get the multi-million-dollar contracts. And there's a lot of mom-and-pa operations. A lot of money was put on the table when the war was over, and there was a need for all these private security guards, and so there was something of a gold rush to get some of these jobs. But as to who these guys are, the industry breaks it down in various tiers. At the top, you've got former special forces, Navy SEALs, Army Rangers, and whatnot, and from SAS, from other countries. South Africa has a lot there. And then you go down to policemen, retired policemen, and then you go down a layer or two below that, and you get to what the business calls Tier Bubba. And this is what they fear: when you have so much demand for private security guards, you're going to start using up the available pool of talent, and so you end up with guys that maybe shouldn't be there.
Do Iraqis, these guys in your pictures, and I've seen other pictures from Iraq as well, they wear uniforms, kind of. Do Iraqi civilians distinguish between private warriors and U.S. forces?
Well, they probably do, and they don't. I mean, they don't really care. They do distinguish in that these guys generally are going through the streets in SUVs, some of them at very high speeds, and some of them with sirens blaring, cutting off cars, even bumping cars out of the way. So Iraqis that I know are pretty upset with this. I mean, you can imagine on your way to work being hit and knocked off the road. And these companies do that. I don't know that the Army has that same approach to moving through traffic. But as far as they're concerned, they're there because of U.S. taxpayer dollars, and they're there because the U.S. Agencies hire them. So as far as they're concerned, It doesn't matter that they're private. Their behavior may be a little different, but they're still representatives of the U.S. government.
One of the stories you focus on was the four contractors for Blackwater who went into Fallujah, were caught, killed, burned, their bodies hung from the bridge, and in the process of doing that, changed American policy.
Yeah, we don't really know what would have happened otherwise, but what we do know is in talking to the Marine commander, Colonel John Tulin, he had very different plans for what he was going to be doing in Fallujah. They didn't anticipate having contractors go through the center of town. In fact, if he had known about it, which he didn't, he told me he would have never allowed it. So what happens is these guys go in, they are ambushed, and this creates a lot of political pressure back in Washington for us to do something in response, and so he's ordered in. He says in the interview, if he ever has to go anywhere again with the Marines, he'll make sure that he has more control over his region, and he'll be much more restrictive about who's running about inside it.
And again, this is one of the big complaints the military has, that these private contractors doing their own business, but they don't coordinate what they're doing with the military or with each other.
Yeah, they're not on the same radios. They're not in the chain of command in any case. Some of them, don't even try to inform the local commander that they're coming through their zone. So it's a pretty chaotic and uncoordinated scene over there. Now, they've tried. Those people starting at CPA and now in the embassy are trying to put together some kind of monitoring operation. They've got something called the ROC, which stands for Reconstruction Operations Center, and they have a daily briefing, and they kind of run a 911 service. If a contractor gets into trouble, he can call them, and then they in turn will call the military. But there's no direct line between the contractors out there and the military.
We're talking about contractors in Iraq and the U.S. military. Our guest is Martin Smith, a correspondent for the PBS program Frontline. His program Private Warriors airs tonight on public television stations around the country. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. Email us, totm@npr.org. And Larry is with us. He's calling from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hello, Larry. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Ed. Hey, I was a overseer of some security companies that work for us under over there in Iraq, and I have to say that I have to differ with a lot of the things that he's saying. The people that worked under me, we closely coordinated with the military. And now, while I admit that the communications aren't that good sometimes, it's up to those contractors, and it's also up to those military commanders on the ground to get that communication going. We had. We coordinated with the military and got Syngar's radios, for example, so that we could coordinate with them continuously. And when we're out on the road, I also differ with Iraqis know who contractors are, and they also know who the military is. The contractors generally drive, F-250s and so on, so they know who they are and what they're doing there. So, that's a misnomer. I'm not sure about the Baghdad area, but I can tell you in places north of there, and places just a little bit south of there, everybody knows what everybody's doing, and we work closely with the military in making sure that everybody was safe and trying to do the right thing.
Martin Larry, Smith? Can I ask you a question? Which company were you with?
Well, I'd rather not say which company I was with. I will tell you that there were two subcontractors underneath me, the security companies, and both of them performed in that way.
Yeah. Well, I would say that you're doing what's in your own best interests, and the military certainly appreciates it when people are getting in touch and coordinating. That's we did witness that. I'm not saying that all of them are running around uncoordinated, but there were numerous complaints that I got from members of the military saying that they weren't being told what was happening, and this was particularly bad in the first half of 2004.
Right, and I understand around the Baghdad area, I may agree with you in that standpoint because, a lot of my sources say that in the Baghdad area, especially around the Greens and around the CPA, that may be the case. But, just in defense of those guys that are out there on the roads every day and having to, protect, like myself, we were doing the Iraqi ammunition. We were taking care of all that stuff. Them guys are out there putting their lives on the line for everybody else, we had close coordination with the military when we would do that kind of stuff.
And Martin Smith, one of the points you make in the documentary is that this is dangerous work.
There's no question that these guys are putting their lives on the line. And any journalist who's over there covering it is, for a shorter period of time, doing the same. I think that the problem with the coordination issue is that it's still somewhat voluntary and catch as catch can. And I agree that around Baghdad it's particularly bad because you just have so many companies. And the point earlier about the people not knowing who is who, I'm not saying that the Iraqis can't see a private contractor and recognize him from the military, but as far as they're concerned, they're all outsiders, and they're all, in a way, getting U.S. taxpayer dollars and are representatives, therefore, of U.S. policy.
And are not accountable to the military chain of command.
That's not necessarily true. We were accountable for all our actions. I mean, whatever we did on the outside. One of the reasons we go fast while we were out on the roads is, the potential threat from an IED. And we
improvised an explosive device. Go ahead.
Right. And contractors also do not have the heavy machine gunnery that the Army has. I mean, the commanding general over there has established policy that says, contractors are not allowed to have anything above what we call assault.
But, Larry, if there's an incident and one of your guys opens fire, does he file an after-action report with the military? Does he explain what he did?
Absolutely. The contractors would have to have, we had what we called serious incident reports, and any time a shot was fired, whether it be just as a warning shot or if the warning shots didn't work, we had what we called an ROI, just like the military did, our rules of engagement. We had to follow those rules of engagement. There was huge scrutiny, say, for example, somebody that tried to infiltrate your convoy, for example, and they were up to no good, and something happened. I mean, that was so scrutinized that, we had to make sure that the people done the right thing, they took the right approach to what was going on, and mainly, that everybody was following those rules of engagement.
Larry, thanks. I'm afraid I know we'll get a response from you, Martin Smith, but we're coming up to a break, so we're going to have to pause here for a second. Larry, thanks very much for the phone call, and we'll be talking more about this issue. Appreciate the call, Larry, joining us from Raleigh, North Carolina. We're talking about military contractors in Iraq. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Back after the break, I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Roughly 20,000 private security contractors operate on the battlefield in Iraq. They make more money than enlisted troops, operate under different rules, and you'll rarely find their deaths listed among the casualties of the war. Today we're looking further into the world's security contractors. Of course, you're invited to join us. If you've worked in a war zone for a private security company or interacted with them while serving in the military, give us a phone call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, totn@npr.org. Our guest is Frontline correspondent Martin Smith. Frontline's documentary Private Warriors airs at 9 p.m. tonight on PBS stations around the country, or check local listings for the time in your area. Martin Smith, just before the break, a caller named Larry said that, in fact, his men worked in his security concern in Iraq were very answerable to the military, had to file reports for every shot fired.
Well, those after-action reports, I'm curious about that. I wanted to ask him whether or not they were filed with the military or filed simply with the company by guards like Larry. Now, these guys like Larry put their lives on the line, and they deserve all the coordination that they should be afforded because it's safer that way. What we found over there was a sort of patchwork of rules and regulations, and when it came to after-action reports, it wasn't always clear to us that those reports were filed with the military, and if they were, they weren't available to us as reporters in the same way that military after-action reports are available. So it's a big subject, and it would be interesting to hear what another contractor would have to say about that.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Glenn. Glenn's calling from San Antonio, Texas.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two quick points. I was an 8-year veteran in the Army and never was over in Iraq. But I have to say that I think it's an abomination that, these private contractors are getting paid so much more than, the average specialist and NCO on the ground there. they put their lives on the line out of, you know, duty and country and some benefits, to be sure. But these private contractors are, let's not forget the fact, they're making a profit here. They choose to put themselves in harm's way for money. The other thing is our soldiers on the ground have enough distractions trying to get Iraq into some semblance of an organized society to have to worry about bailing out contractors when they overextend themselves and find themselves in trouble.
Glenn, the other factor in this is presumably if those 20,000 private security contractors weren't there, U.S. military forces might have to make up those numbers and provide security for all those people that the contractors do now.
Well, I think that that discussion should take place. Neil, I think that overall America's been able to fight war and have ice cream too and have cake along with it. We should have to make a decision that, A, we need more forces, so we need to either increase incentives to bring people into the military or maybe think about a draft. And secondly, the other point is I think we should compensate our soldiers more. There's no reason why two married specialists should have to be on food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
So we should answer those questions. We either need to curtail our policy, our foreign policy, to the forces that we have, or increase our forces to meet that budget. But that discussion isn't taking place because Americans aren't having to make that choice.
Martin Smith?
I think Glenn makes some very, very good points here. We enter the marketplace at our own peril. We open up war to private interests, and now the Army has to compete for talent against the prices that are being offered in the private sector. And we are, the taxpayers, are the ones that are going to have to pay for this. There are complaints that in the military they're putting a lot of training into preparing a Army Ranger or a Navy SEAL for duty. And if he gets out of his, if he leaves the service before his time is up and goes over to Iraq as a private security guard, that investment has been partially lost. And that's what you're seeing. They're trying to raise their enlistment numbers in the Army, and they're having a hard time doing it. They're not making the numbers, and they are trying to offer more incentives, but they can't compete with the prices that are being paid by the private sector to these soldiers. I mean, to these ex-soldiers, should say.
Your private soldiers. Glenn, thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Keep spreading the word. Thank you.
Joining us now is Peter Singer, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and author of the book Corporate Warriors, The Rise of the Private Military Industry, one of the people interviewed in tonight's PBS Frontline program, Private Warriors. And he joins us from the studios of the Brookings Institution here in Washington, D.C. Good to have you back on the program, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
I'm wondering, as you look at the how important are these contractors of various types? And there are others, of course, too, the giant Kellogg Brown and Root, which surprised so much of the logistic support for American forces in Iraq. Would this conflict be possible without them?
That's a really good question. You know, to take a step back and look at the numbers here, you've got more than 20,000 private military contractors. That is people doing soldiers' roles as opposed to the oil workers or reconstruction workers. Mm-hmm. And that 20,000 is more than the rest of the coalition combined. So in a sense, we don't have a coalition of the willing. We've actually got a coalition of the billing in place there. And then you say, okay, what would happen if we didn't have those 20,000 forces there? Well, simply put, as the previous caller was talking about, we either have to expand the military, and that would have meant that our Secretary of Defense would have to admit that he was wrong, or you would call up more National Guard and Reserves, and that would obviously be pretty politically unpopular. And remember, the time period that this is happening during is a presidential election campaign. Or your third option would be you'd have to bring in more allies, and that would come with some pretty tough political compromises to make with those allies. Well, instead, we took, you know, door number four, which was using private contractors, turning to the private market for these soldiers. And what that meant is it also came with, if you use a business terminology, a positive externality. The casualties among these soldiers, these private soldiers, not only did you get 20,000, but it also meant that when they were killed or wounded or taken capture, it didn't have the public weight that it does when a U.S. soldier is killed, wounded, or taken capture. You had more than 200 have been killed so far, an estimated 800 or more have been wounded. And so you compare this with the debate over the official casualty tolls, and it's another way that we see how this phenomenon has taken place.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Janine. Janine calling from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Y'all just made most of the points that I had called about, and that was that we basically are hiring mercenaries to go in and fight our war. And that cuts down on the number of people that can be, that are available to go in as enlisted servicemen. And I just think it's demoralizing to the people that are there fighting, you know, fighting through the at the pay that they're being paid. And that for political reasons, Rumsfeld has chosen to pay other people a lot more money, when that money could go in to make it a lot more appealing for people to join. Well, I mean, you know, especially why would you join when you can go through a hiring agency and come out a whole lot better off financially?
Mm-hmm.
The other point that I wanted to make is that just lost my train of thought.
Janine, it happens all the time. Don't worry about it. Hang on for a second, and let me just ask Peter Singer about the that word mercenaries. It's a term that provokes an emotional response in a lot of people. And is it a fair term to apply to the security contractors in Iraq?
In a legal sense, no. A mercenary is a very specific word at the end of the day in terms of it's actually as a legal definition the same way if you say murder, it has a legal definition, or manslaughter. And so mercenary, you have to be an individual. You can't be within a broader organization. You have to be non-national. So, for example, the Americans who are working for the American companies and for on behalf of the American government, they wouldn't fit that mercenary definition. Same thing, they're organized into corporations. So there's a lot of differences there. They arguably are fighting in an internal conflict, which under the legal definition of mercenary means that it's not a mercenary situation. So really the problem is that the legal definition of mercenary is so bad that really no one meets it. If we take a step back and look at this analytically, what we're talking about in effect is a shift in the mercenary trade, the corporatization of that trade. So where now it's taking place in corporations that are open market that you and I can buy stock in.
Janine, thanks very much.
I want to make one other point. That's people complain about journalists going in to, you know, to Iraq and then reporting out and having too much freedom. But I don't know the corporate people that are in a corporate environment that are over there aren't putting us at risk in a similar way because they're not under the jurisdiction of the military.
Janine, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate
it. Okay, thank you.
Congress has been trying to clear up some of the haziness surrounding the role of private security contractors. Democrat David Price of North Carolina wrote the Transportation and Accountability in Security Contracting Act, and he joins us now from Capitol Hill. Congressman, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry to miss the earlier part of the show. I have been tied up with votes on the House floor, but here I am, and I'm glad to join you.
Well, the major elements of your bill were passed in late May. What would it do?
The bill is actually passed in two segments, one last year along with the defense authorization bill as an amendment, and then the second part this year to this year's defense authorization bill. Let me say that the first thing we did in getting wind of this situation, and Peter Singer was a big help with this, is to ask for a Government Accountability Office study of the entire scope of this practice of contracting and the extent to which we knew about it, had accounted for it, and the extent to which their work was being properly overseen, the extent to which they were part of the military chain of command or were following under U.S. law, a whole range of questions. And so the GAO is now putting out those studies. There are two that have come out. There are two more to come, and we think that that will give us a comprehensive overview of this situation. We already know enough, though, to have introduced two bills, and those bills have in large part been enacted. The first one was enacted last year. It's an amendment to the Military Extraterritorial Jurisdiction Act, which arguably should have included these contractors all along, but it clearly had not. They'd never been tried under it. So what the so-called MEJA bill would do is to clarify that this military law applies to any civilian employee or contractor or subcontractor of DOD or any other federal agency, clarify that it's DOD's responsibility to take the first steps in turning contractors who commit a crime over to authorities, clarify that war crimes are covered under MEJA, and require the Department of Defense to issue regulations to implement all this. So that was done last year as part of the defense authorization bill. That did leave the matter of accountability and transparency and the oversight of contracting, though, as unfinished business. And so we introduced the bill you referred to, the Transparency and Accountability in Security Contracting Act. This is a bill that would require contractors to report the number of personnel they're employing, the kind of training they have, the casualties they experience, and so forth, the cost of carrying out the contract. They'd require DOD and other agencies to set minimum standards for contracting practices, and it would require some cost-effectiveness accounting. Not all of that got into this year's defense bill, but the contractors on the battlefield section of the defense bill that we just are processing at the moment, they would require security contractors to report on the number of personnel, their training. It would provide some improved accountability between the military commanders and contractors, but wouldn't have all the guidelines that we'd hoped for. But we think it's a major step forward. So there has been some congressional attention to this. I think my bills are the main bills. Others have had various pieces of this, but there's been bipartisan support, and we've gotten a good part of this already incorporated into the law.
We're talking with Congressman David Price, a Democrat of North Carolina, about the Transparency and Accountability in Security Contracting Act. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Doug Brooks, president of the International Peace Operations Association. That's a grouping of 18 private sector service companies that provide, among other things, security operations in conflict zones. He's with us from his hotel in New York City. Nice of you to join us today.
It's a real pleasure.
I understand you work closely with Congressman Price on the contractor bill. Why do you support it?
Well, we worked with the staff, and the staff was actually came to us and said they were working on this, and we were happy to bring our members together and talk about it. I mean, essentially, what he's asking for is greater transparency and accountability, which is something our association's been calling for quite a while.
I've been calling for it. Why can't you just do it?
Well, we have our own voluntary code of conduct, which our members have signed on to, which I think is sort of a sign of leadership within the industry and saying, look, you know, we're going to be working with the government as a client. Client has to be comfortable with the people that it's hiring. So, for example, we supported the MEJA bill last year that broadened MEJA and made it more effective, and we'd support improvements on it even again.
Wouldn't this make your operations more expensive?
Not necessarily. I mean, a lot of this stuff, if you look at what's required within even Congressman Price's bill, a lot of it's sort of already provided to Department of Defense, to the contracting officers, since the companies work quite closely with them anyway. I think a lot of it is just maybe Congress wasn't getting all of this information, and so what his act will do is, I think, make it a little bit more transparent, which is good.
Congressman Price,
I do appreciate that the contractors have cooperated into this, and I think it's absolutely right that the responsible contractors want this whole practice to be under the law and accountable. I don't think it's quite accurate to say that DOD has had all the information it needed. Our experience, and I think GAO's experience also, has been that the contracting agencies often lack the very basic information you would think they would have. And so I do think there has been this need for a change in the law. It's not just Congress that needs the information. It's also the agencies that are responsible for the contracting in the first instance.
Well, if I could support that and actually say that one thing we've actually supported a lot is improving the numbers of contracting officers in the field, improving essentially the oversight that we have in the field. We have a lot of contractors out there, and the contracting officers, there aren't enough of them, I don't think, and there aren't enough, they aren't spending enough time in the field. During Vietnam, we had over 80,000 contractors working in Vietnam, and contracting officers would go into the field for a year at a time to oversee the contract.
Let me just ask Congressman, would all the security firms be covered? Some of them are South African, British, other nationalities. Some of them don't work for DOD.
Well, the firms that are working for any American agency, whether it's DOD or Interior or AID, if they're performing a security function and they're working for an American governmental agency, they'd be covered.
But if they're working for an Iraqi governmental organization or for an Iraqi politician or somebody who wanted to protect themselves?
Well, our coverage extends to American military operations and to the operations that we are contracting out.
So there
are some possible conflicts in these situations. Of course, this just doesn't just apply to Iraq. There are some possible situations where these contractors would be subject to the law in the country where they're working.
Yeah, absolutely. They would be if they're working for the Iraqis. And, of course, for any American company serving abroad, they have to go through ITAR, which is International Traffic and Arms Regulations. Essentially, any service or equipment, military equipment that's sold abroad, has to go through State Department and get a licensing and approval. So they would be under that in any case.
Thank you both very much. We appreciate your time today. David Price, Democrat of North Carolina, wrote the Transparency and Accountability in Security Contracting Act. He joined us from Capitol Hill. Congressman, thanks for coming off the floor to speak with us today.
Thank you very much.
And we also heard from Doug Brooks, president of the International Peace Operations Association. Thanks for your time today.
It's been a real pleasure.
We're going to continue our conversation about contractors after a short break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're talking about private security contractors in Iraq, the risks they run, the rules they operate under, and the growing friction with uniformed troops. Our guests are frontline correspondent Martin Smith, whose documentary Private Warriors airs tonight on PBS stations around the country, and Brookings fellow Peter Singer, author of Corporate Warriors, The Rise of the Private Military Industry. And let's get another caller on the line. And this is Timmy. Timmy's calling us from San Jose, California. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to, bring my perspective to the table. Former Marine, I was actually involved in the invasion of Iraq and then came back and decided to go on the private contracting side. And I've heard a lot of comments today. I think everybody has made a good point, no doubt about it. I'm looking forward to watching the show tonight. Hopefully it's a balanced show. There are a lot of good points made today as far as pros and cons. Towards what private security contractors do. I just hope that everybody has an open mind about it. Obviously, there were some callers earlier that were very upset at the fact that security contractors get paid, quote-unquote, more. But obviously, the other side to that story is that we're in here for a short time. We know. Let me take another step back. I want to make the analogy of, since I am in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, and I've experienced the Internet boom, working with corporate 500 companies, it's almost the same as what happened during the Internet years, where there was a lot of growth, and obviously there were a lot of people being hired, whether they were qualified or not. That's the debate here. But again, quote-unquote contractors, whether they're security contractors or whatnot, we're taking a job for a limited amount of time. So I want to make that point, the first point. And other points that were made today was that lack of coordination. Yes, there is, and there is a lack of coordination between military and what we do. But it's not our intent to do so. I've been in both situations. I've actually been in northern Iraq, central Iraq, and I've been able to see what goes on behind the operations of some very well-run operations and also some, quote-unquote, mom-and-pop operations. So I welcome the rules and regulations because I do believe what we are doing provides a much-needed service over there. And, again, not a lot of people realize it, again, because it's a bit, very emotional issue when you get down to the fact that, all right, well, yeah, these...
Sure. One of the points that I believe it's a Marine officer makes in the film on PBS tonight is that when push comes to shove, private contractors can say, well, you know what? It's getting I think I'll go home. Troops don't have that option.
It's actually Peter Singer makes that point.
Oh, is it Peter Singer who makes the point?
Yeah.
That's a good point, and I'm not too sure how to respond back to that. I guess maybe there is no response, but like I said, I've been on both sides, and sure, I'm actually still obligated in the military, so I could be called back any moment, and if I am, then I'll go, but I don't know how to really make a response to that point. Yeah, you're right, we can, I guess, technically cut out when things get hot, but in a sense, I guess that balances things out, because then it does weed out the people that shouldn't be there. And yes, I do agree that there are a lot of people that should not be there. And hopefully, in the long run, we will be able to weed out these quote-unquote Cowboys or Yahoos or whatever you want to call them. So. Yeah.
I think it's very interesting to hear these points coming from people that have experience in the business. It confirms our own reporting that there is this problem. And the industry, I wanted to go back to the previous conversation, Neil, if I can.
Sure.
With the congressman and with Doug Brooks, who I point out is an industry rep.
Yes.
The business has been attempting to regulate itself for some time now. Doug Brooks' colleague, a person he's worked with, Lawrence Peter, over there is was a regulator for CPA, and he has taken to quoting an old Ben Franklin quote saying, if we don't hang together, we will most certainly hang separately. They have been attempting to get a handle on things because they know they've got a problem. The congressman comes from a state where a lot of these companies are located. The question I have is whether or not the rules that they're going to put through Congress have any real enforcement, that there's any money there for enforcement. Because you can have a lot of laws on the books, but in a place like Iraq, if you don't have enforcement, just, you know, you can forget about it.
Mm-hmm. If I could make a real quick point.
And make it very quick, if you would, Timmy.
Sure. I guess there are a couple categories of the contractors, I guess, depending on who they contract through. Obviously, either DOD or maybe it could be a contract to the Army Corps of Engineers, but I do know that if you're contracted through the State Department, the rules and regulations are so tight that if you do anything that goes against the State Department's regulations, and there are several large companies, one you mentioned, Blackwater, that is under the contract, if you do anything that's beyond the regulations, you're let go. And even if you do something that can be constituted as illegal or against the law, you will be prosecuted by the State Department, and the State Department has its own...
Has anybody been prosecuted, Timmy? Has anybody been prosecuted?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that's...
I'll weigh in on that if I can.
We'll just get a quick answer from this. Go ahead, Martin.
Peter, you were gonna say something.
I'll weigh in on it. The caller makes a really good point, and the challenge here is that you have the regulations, but at the end of the day, when you don't have enforcement, that's a problem. And it really, we've had more than 20,000 private contractors in Iraq for more than 2 years, and we can't identify even one that's been prosecuted for any crimes. And so what we have to, you know, ask ourselves is either we've got a Stepford Village in Iraq where, you know, human nature has been overcome,
right,
or we've got a problem. Simply put, we've got a gap in the law and a lack of political will to fill it.
Timmy, I asked this question of Lawrence Peter whether or not there had ever been even a reprimand of any private security officer. He was in a position to know this, still is. He could not recall a single incident in which a private security officer was ever reprimanded for their behavior.
Timmy, thanks so much for the phone call. We appreciate it. And we'd like to thank our guests, Peter Singer of the Brookings Institution, author of Corporate Warriors, The Rise of the Private Military Industry. Thanks for being on the show, as always.
Thank you.
And Martin Smith, frontline correspondent. His documentary Private Warriors about private contractors in Iraq will air tonight on PBS. Good luck with the program. And Martin, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, it's going to be a conversation about the summit meeting today between Israeli and Palestinian leaders. The first word out of it from the Palestinian side, difficult.